It sounds like Secular Woman is not particularly shy about controversy.
Yeah, no.
I was going to ask if that was a fair assessment. Okay.
No, not at all.
Welcome to the Humanist Hour, the official broadcast of the American Humanist Association. In this episode, we'll travel back in time to talk about what women faced trying to participate in the secular movement in 2012, catch up with the Women in Secularism Conference, and learn about Secular Woman's campaign to abort theocracy. In spring of 2012, the secular movement was a different place for women. We were grossly underrepresented on stage, in print, and in the membership of our organizations. In a movement that prides itself on asking questions, the people asking why this underrepresentation was happening were being shouted down. The Center for Inquiry's Women in Secularism Conference in Washington, D.C. was created to address these problems. The brainchild of Melody Hensley, the conference featured a weekend of only women speakers, and it changed the movement. This week, Stephanie Zvan talks to Debbie Goddard, Director of Outreach at CFI and Director of African Americans for Humanism, about the history of the conference and what people can look forward to this year. Debbie is organizing Women in Secularism this fall, September 23rd through the 25th, the fourth of these conferences. Stephanie also talks with Monette Richards, president of CFI Northeast Ohio and co-president of Secular Woman. Secular Woman is an organization that was born at the first Women in Secularism conference. We'll catch up on what it's been up to, as well as its hopes and plans for the future.
I am speaking today with Debbie Goddard, who is the Director of Outreach for the Center of Inquiry and the Director of African Americans for Humanism. Welcome to the show, Debbie.
Thanks for having me.
Now, you have been with CFI as long as Women in Secularism has been going on, but you weren't part, I think, of organizing the first one. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah. I helped out with some of the promotions, but really didn't do any of the heavy lifting or the planning of that one.
But being you, you know the history because this is part of the history of the secular movement. Tell me a little bit about how Women in Secularism got started.
Many props go to Melody Hensley, who was at the time the director of the Center for Inquiry branch in Washington, D.C. She started working on Women in Secularism, I believe, in the spring of 2011. That first Women in Secularism conference happened in May 2012, so she'd started with the idea plenty ahead of time. But even before that, she'd had the idea to have sort of topical or focused conferences. She was actually the lead organizer in 2010 of what became a national African Americans for Humanism conference in Washington, D.C. I remember talking with her after that conference, which I was glad to have the opportunity to participate in. It was a great event. It brought in about 65 people from all over the country. And there was so much excitement and enthusiasm at that event that at the first evening gathering upstairs at a bar down the street, people were actually crying in joy. Some of them had said, including this one couple from Missouri, I think, that they'd never met another Black atheist. And so being surrounded by 60 of them was just an overwhelming experience. So I remember talking to Melody after that and her saying that she wanted to do more events like this to bring in people and have presentations on some of the topics that don't get much stage time, that are underrepresented. And so I know in spring of 2011, she started planning a Women in Secularism event.
And this is the point where I disclosed that I was one of the people who did quite a bit to promote the original conference. I spoke at the second one, so I have a good bit of history with Women in Secularism myself, just so people don't think I'm a completely disinterested person on this topic. Tell me a little bit about the general atmosphere within the secular movement with regard to women and what were considered women's issues at the time that Melody started planning the original Women in Secularism.
It seems so long ago now. Geez, it was pre-Elevator Gate. I know she said a few times that she started this before Elevator Gate. Before Melody got involved in the secular movement, she actually was a feminist activist and started a women's group in Washington, D.C., and I think a secular-focused women's group, if I'm not mistaken, before she even started volunteering for the Center for Inquiry branch there. She ran an online forum, too, as well, if I'm not mistaken. So I know that she was concerned about issues like underrepresentation. There were several conferences in the previous couple of years before the first Women in Secularism conference where there were, oh man, in one example, I think they had something like 40-some-odd speakers and only 2 or 3 women on the program. And so there just seemed to be real underrepresentation when we knew that there were activists and writers and bloggers and organizers out there who could speak about things who are women. And so one of her goals for the conference was to have a stage for some of these women to have a voice and to present their perspectives. I know that there was also some pushback when people brought up their concerns that there was underrepresentation, and not just in speakers. Obviously, some of the conferences did not have women on the schedule. We still see that the case now, but less so. But also we saw that in conference and event attendance and in participation. And again, that's still the case, but maybe less so now. It was likely that, for example, if I showed up to a local skeptics group meeting somewhere, probably maybe 15% of the attendance would be women. And there were national conferences where women were hugely underrepresented. But as not just women, but particularly women started writing blog posts and pointing this out in social media and emailing conference organizers and saying, hey, this is kind of strange that you don't have many women on your program. It would be cool if you had more women. There was definitely some pushback. There were people who said, well, it shouldn't have to matter what their gender is. I thought we were beyond sexism. You know, I thought we were beyond these gender distinctions. You're being sexist by paying attention to things like this. And in some cases, worse things happened. Some harassment.
Yeah, we could probably spend a whole show on that.
Yep. Several shows, maybe several shows.
So that was the atmosphere into which the first Women in Secularism was launched. You mentioned that there were very few female speakers at many to most of the conferences in the movement. My own research, which I did a year and a half ago, so I'm not going to have exact numbers in front of me, showed that at the time, major conferences had maybe 10 to 15% women speakers. And as of that year and a half ago, most of them were in the 40 to 50% range.
I think there was a study that came out of British Columbia or somewhere in Canada that showed something similar, that it went from about 10%, a little over 10%, to high 30s or low 40s. And this was also done a couple of years ago. But there was a spike after the first Women in Secularism conference.
Did folks organizing Women in Secularism have any trouble finding enough women to fill the schedule? I mean, this was a full weekend conference.
They did not. We certainly still do not. We have binders full of women, actually. Or at least spreadsheets. Some Google Docs with long lists of people that we could use for these conferences. And one interesting thing that's come out of this is that I think since the first one, there has been some effort made and some attention paid to bringing women on stage who maybe don't have as much experience speaking at conferences, but have something interesting to say. And so we've had some people on it where maybe it's their first national conference that they're speaking at, or maybe their second, or maybe they've done one regional event. And some of those speakers have gone on to now be experienced sort of expert speakers with, you know, half a dozen other conference appearances under their belt. And they've really developed and amplified their voice at other events. There are plenty of women that we could be using. And as regional conferences have grown and as other events have higher percentages of women on their speaker lists, then we see even more. It's always difficult to pick from the qualified and interesting people out there.
Women in Secularism is also one of the earliest conferences to regularly feature the voice of ex-Muslim women, isn't it?
Yeah, at the first Women in Secularism conference, one of the last speakers on Saturday, I think, was Wafa Sultan. who was a former Muslim from, I believe, Syria, who gave a fiery and moving presentation about basically what she could not do in Syria and how different it was when she came to a place like the United States, when she came to places where basically she could be free. And, you know, the first time that she had her arms exposed, just her elbows and her forearms exposed, she looked around to see who was watching her, or to make sure that, I think she said, her father wouldn't come after her, because she wasn't used to being able to do that. And all these stories that she told there about just sort of a tangible oppression that she experienced, and how different she felt when she could be free, but how difficult it was for her to adjust to that.
Pretty much everybody cried. You've also had Maryam Namazi speak. I think one of her first speaking engagements in the U.S., although she's been back several times since.
Because she's in the U.K., because she's based in London, she doesn't have a lot of speaking engagements in the U.S. So we have Women in Secularism 4 in September this year, and she's coming back for that. At Women in Secularism 2, Maryam Namazi spoke about the difference between Islam and Islamism and the effects of this, I forget the word she used, but political and religious ideology, particularly on women. And she has a very powerful personal story as well about growing up in Iran and the revolution, and suddenly she wasn't allowed to go to school anymore. None of the girls were allowed to go to school. And she wanted to go to school. And eventually her family moved to England, where she's been since, basically fighting for the rights of women. She runs the Council of Ex-Muslims in Britain. She's one of the bravest people I know. She's had a lot of experiences in the last year that she's been writing about, and her perspective is one that I think a lot of people will really appreciate hearing. She has recently been, they call it no-platformed, at some different universities in the UK, where a secular or atheist student group will invite her in to give a talk about her work fighting Islamism, about this threat. And other groups will get together and protest her coming and saying that if she's speaking out against Islamism, then that's harmful and Islamophobic. And so they've gotten the university to rescind the speaking invitation, which is an interesting intersection of free expression issues and secular activism. And so I think she'll be speaking some about that. I know there was a video that went around from earlier this year of her giving a talk at Goldsmiths University, I believe, and being interrupted by students who were members of the Muslim Student Association who didn't want her speaking. And it was quite disruptive. One of them at some point reached over and turned off her projector.
You're listening to The Humanist Hour. I'm Stephanie Zavan, and I am speaking with Debbie Goddard, Director of Outreach at the Center for Inquiry, and Director of African Americans for Humanism, about CFI's Women in Secularism Conference.
And she tried to make this a very clear distinction, again, between Islam, the belief, and Muslims, the people, and Islamism, the socio-political movement and ideology, which is very oppressive. So I believe she'll be talking about that and the different work she's done.
Excellent. I think that's something we really need to grapple with as a movement, even if we don't all agree when we're done talking about it. And actually, that's one of the things that I think people perhaps have a bit of a misconception about women in secularism. It has been, in the past at least, a very explicitly feminist conference. And some people have accused the conference, some of them relatively close to the conference and infamously doing so, of being kind of an echo chamber and not listening to challenges enough. Having been to all three of the previous conferences, I do have to wonder sometimes, are they sitting in the same room that I am? Because I hear plenty of things that I don't agree with or don't agree with the priorities or emphasis on. Are there other people you think have done a good job of challenging their audience?
Yep. I think that's one of the really fun and interesting things about women in secularism. It's an audience that is very interested in these issues, but they're not necessarily agreeing on them, as you said. In some cases, we're learning a lot of things. So one example of that is Annie Laurie Gaylor's presentation at the first one, where she talked about the history of free-thinking women, secular women, in feminist history. So the role that secular women played in feminist history, which I think I'd heard her do that talk maybe years and years and years ago, but I'd never remember all of it. I always learn so much. So there are presentations like that with some of them, you know, very solid history and information. But about half the conference is panels made up of people, some of who are presenters at other parts of the conference, but they have different perspectives on things. And there's always been time for discussion between the panelists, disagreement, fleshing out of different perspectives. You know, it's not all just nod and say yes. There was an interesting panel at the first conference that went into scientism. Sikivu Hutchinson used the term scientism, and there was some disagreement about what that is and whether it's a good or bad thing. One of the panels, I think, at Women in Secularism 3 in 2014 was, should we be concerned about multiculturalism? The answer is not implied from that. Yes, we should. No, we shouldn't. Well, people had different perspectives on that. So, yeah, it's absolutely a place for challenging perspectives and interesting discussion, expanding our ideas about these things. I've always learned a lot. I've changed my mind on a couple things as a result of attending this. And this year, we have a panel that was actually my suggestion, and I'm glad, since I'm one of the primary coordinators this year, that I was able to make it happen. I'm very excited about it, about free expression and safe spaces. Basically, a panel of people who will be fleshing out if there's really an inherent conflict. How do we balance free expression with other concerns? Mariam Namazi will be participating on that panel as well, since she's had a lot of experience with this kind of thing. But we have a host of others who will be talking about this. It's not a black and white issue. And people like Melanie Brewster, who is a psychologist, who's actually worked with a person who coined the term microaggression, but is also a teacher, will be one of the people on that panel. Soraya Shamali, who is a feminist activist, will be on that panel. It'll be an interesting time, and I'm sure it won't be total agreement.
No. No, I can't imagine that group of people all agreeing on that topic.
No.
Although I expect that they will find places where they very much do agree, and will narrow things down to an interesting middle ground where they disagree.
Yeah. I mean, even in disagreement, it tends to be a cooperative environment. It's, again, one of the very exciting things about the conference.
So you mentioned Soraya. One of the things that I have always been impressed with on Women in Secularism is the fact that emphasis has been placed on not just women who are activists within the secular movement, but also bringing in women from outside the secular movement who are still non-believers, who are still activists, but aren't necessarily atheist or humanist activists.
Soraya came to, I think, the first conference and introduced herself to us and told us about the kinds of things she does and the writing she was doing and her interests, and said, you know, I'm in the DC area. We connected, not just me and her, but Melody Hensley and others connected with her as well. And in the time since that first conference, her writing has blown us away. And she's traveled the world giving presentations, participating with TED Talks, writing in some venues with huge platforms about feminism, about online harassment, about all kinds of issues, about the role of religion in suppressing women's rights. So I'm very glad that we connected with her. We've had her as a panel moderator and speaker at subsequent conferences, and she'll be at this one as well. Another one that I'm very excited about for this conference is Janetta Elzey, or known on Twitter as Netta, with six A's maybe, Netta. And she is an activist, an African-American young woman from Ferguson, Missouri, who's been involved with actions in Ferguson basically since they started, and has grown to be one of the bigger voices in the Black Lives Matter movement. She was on the cover of, I believe, Ebony a couple months ago. She's been in a couple other venues, and I think it was you that mentioned that she had been critical of the role of organized religion in modern day racial justice organizing.
Let me be clear here. I've been begging you to get her as a speaker since I found out there would be a Women in Secularism 4.
That is a more accurate way to say that.
Yes. I have no dignity.
So someone named Stephanie has had a really excellent suggestion. And even though I follow her on Twitter, I didn't catch that. I didn't realize that she'd been critical of organized religion. And after poking around a bit, it was clear in a few interviews, and actually in some tweets as well, but in some interviews, she talked about going to Catholic school as a kid and said that she's not religious anymore, and said how some of the established organizers for racial justice expect sort of a respectability politics going on in Black Lives Matter, expect there to be church organizing, expect there to be church leaders at the forefront, instead of what we see, which is a lot of young people, queer people, women, and not necessarily church leaders, at the forefront of Black Lives Matter. So that's interesting. She hasn't been connected to the secular movement yet, and she has some really great things to say. So she'll be speaking about racial justice movement, racial justice organizing, and how secular it is and not connected to the churches, partly because a lot of the people at the forefront are young queer people.
And in fact, at various vigils, etc., where most of the speakers have been community church leaders, it has not been uncommon to see young activists walk in and take over the stage because they're not hearing what they need to hear from the churches. So that should be very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's particularly interesting to me because in my role as the director of African Americans for Humanism, I get asked a lot about the role of the Black church and whether there are institutions that can replace it. What is the Black community going to do without it? And here we're seeing a movement that's getting a lot of people involved and interested that is not led by the churches. So I've been paying close attention to Black Lives Matter and the different work that these mostly young people have been doing.
Excellent. I'm looking forward to that.
We've also had some really interesting authors like Barbara Ehrenreich and Katha Pollitt. I don't know if they've ever spoken at atheist conferences before. If they have, it hasn't been in many, many, many years. And we featured them at some conferences. Again, I'd love to have them speak more at events in our movement. Katha Pollitt came out with a book last fall, I believe, or maybe earlier this spring, called Pro, about abortion access. We have tried to think broadly about the kinds of issues we want to see and finding secular women to speak about them, and not just people who are active and have already spoken at secular movement events.
So speaking of these issues, it doesn't escape me that we're starting to see more talks about these kinds of issues at more broadly focused conventions, particularly national conventions. Is that a complete coincidence?
No, I don't think it is. I mean, maybe it is, and I'm just biased in my perspective. I've been working in this movement for 10 years now, but I got involved a few years before that. So I've been involved in this for 16 years. And when I first went to national conferences, a lot of the people that I saw on stage were philosophers and scientists and journalists and other book authors. And I didn't see a lot of activists or certain kinds of educators. We didn't draw from certain fields, it seemed. I mean, there were some, but not that many. And I think, particularly in the last 5 years, I've seen a real growth in the numbers of people coming out of activism and blogging and writing online for a more general audience, and people who run local groups on stage. Certainly, we've drawn from that for women in secularism in the past to highlight different kinds of skills and backgrounds. And I've seen that happen at other conferences too, so I'd like to think that women in secularism conferences have contributed to a shift in what we value in our speakers and presenters. You know, it's not just philosophers, it's not just scientists. It has contributed to a shift in our conferences and a shift in the way we think about the voices that we put on stage and give a platform to.
So does that mean there won't be any philosophers or scientists at Women in Secularism 4?
We still have philosophers and scientists. We can't hate on the philosophers and scientists. They have valuable things to say, too. Yeah, we actually have, for the first time, a panel that is about science, about women in science. We had one about skepticism a couple conferences ago. But this will be a little different. We're pulling from women who are science writers or scientists, practicing scientists. And that includes Emily Willingham, who has done a lot of research about autism. And I think about the effect of pesticides as well. She's very active online, kind of translating science for the public. I think she writes for Forbes right now and a couple other things. I see her on Twitter a lot as well. So she'll be talking about that. She also, of course, talks a lot about women in science, some of the issues that women have getting published and other things. We also have Janet Stemwedel. She has a PhD in chemistry and in philosophy and now teaches with a focus on the philosophy of science. But she also has experience talking about things like Henrietta Lacks and body ownership, whether we own our genes. She's talked also about harassment in science, some of the difficulties for women in STEM. So I'm very excited to have her. And then Coven Sinapathy, who recently spoke at Skepticon and is not a scientist, but is a science advocate, a huge science advocate, also writes for Forbes, and organized Moms Together to protest moms who protest against Monsanto.
One of the big hits of Women in Secularism 2 was Rebecca Goldstein's talk. She is coming back this year?
She is. And actually, I didn't get a chance to see her talk, but when it ended, I was surprised to see so many people leaving who were just obviously greatly moved by the talk. Yeah, and the importance of mattering, of feeling like we matter. And she's a philosopher, and one of the philosophers we have coming back. It seems that the field of mattering as something that academics study sort of grew out of her interest and her writing about it. You know, how we might make decisions as mothers, for example. The way that we invest ourselves in our kids, because that makes us matter. And so if you grow up in a patriarchal religious structure, where you don't have a lot of freedom as a woman, you know, as a girl or a woman in that religion, you might want to have a lot of kids and you might be motivated to do these other things because in that structure, those kinds of actions make you matter. And I think the reaction I saw from people to that presentation, the way that it helped them frame their life decisions, the way that it helped them frame themselves, the way they thought about themselves in society, man, I regretted that I missed it. And I know she's spoken about it since a couple of times. At she spoke about mattering at the CFI event she attended last year, our national conference here in Amherst. And I've heard similar things since, that it's very moving. And she has there's a poetry to the way that she expresses herself and the way that she expresses these ideas. I've sat through a lot of philosophy talks. I was a philosophy major as an undergrad, and I'm not usually moved like that, but I've heard her at some other events, and one of the differences, I think, was how it made me think about myself and the world. So it wasn't just the ideas as these disconnected ideologies out there. It was thinking about our place in the world and our relationships with each other which is an important part of humanism and of what our movement does.
Because this was an issue for the first women in secularism, let me just ask flat out, are men allowed to show up?
Men are absolutely allowed to show up. I was surprised to hear at the first conference that men thought that they wouldn't be welcome at the event. They said, we thought it was a women's conference, and we said, well, it's a women in secularism conference, but absolutely, men need to be at conferences like this. Men need to learn. Men and women and non-binary people need to learn from events like this. It's just the focus and the issues and the speakers that you'll see is what's different. But everyone is welcome to attend. We hope that men attend. Whether people think that they will disagree and maybe be challenged by some of the presentations or, you know, come see some of the speakers and writers that you admire on stage, this is absolutely a welcoming place for men. I think at the first conference, we had something like 85% women, 15% men. I don't know, Stephanie, if you're...
Something like that.
And a lot of women there said that it was their first time coming to a national event. The numbers moved a bit over the year, but still we had, even at the third one, a majority female audience. But please, everyone is welcome to attend.
And I do want to note, since you brought that up, that while it is called Women in Secularism, there are non-binary speakers, quite a number of them at this point, who have been part of this. This is not an exclusionary definition of women.
Indeed.
All right, so now that we've told everybody why they want to show up, when is it and how do they register?
The conference is the last weekend in September, September 23rd through 25th. It's just outside of Washington, D.C., in Crystal City, Virginia. They can register online at womeninsecularism.org or call us here at Center for Inquiry headquarters, and we can also do registrations over the phone. There is a great student discount, so we're hoping that a lot of students attend. I know that I got involved in this movement myself when I was a student, so national conferences were an excellent way to plug into a bigger scene. If you're in the DC area or able to travel in, we hope to see you there.
I will definitely be there. I'll see you in September, Debbie.
Sounds good.
You're listening to The Humanist Hour. I'm Stephanie Zavan, and I'm speaking with Monette Richards, co-president of Secular Woman, about her organization.
I am talking to Monette Richards, who is one of the co-presidents of Secular Woman, and the president of the Center for Inquiry, Northeast Ohio. Welcome to the show, Monette.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
So we want to talk about Secular Woman, its history, and what you guys have been up to, what you want to be up to. Tell me how it is that Secular Woman got started.
Secular Woman was the brainchild of four women who had, it was right after Women in Secularism, first one that CFI put on, conference of all women speakers, all women presenters about women, for women. And right at a time in the movement where sexual harassment policies were being bandied about, women were finally starting to say, hey, you know, we deserve to be a part of this movement and without all the hassle that we've been getting. They formed the group within, I think, like 3 months, had it set up and ready to go and hit the ground running. And that was in 2012. We are in our fourth year, and we've done quite a bit.
So what was the mission of Secular Woman?
The mission of Secular Woman is to raise the voices of secular women, both within the movement and without, given amplification. Basically, support the projects, their voices, what they're doing.
When Secular Woman started, do you feel that it was difficult for women to be heard in the movement?
Yes, actually, at the time that Secular Woman started, there was a lot going on, especially online, with anti-harassment policies were being requested at conferences, and there was this huge blowback that was somewhat, I guess, unexpected from a lot of people. And stories coming out of presenters, other, you know, kind of movers and shakers in the movement being problems for women. And the spaces were taken up by mostly male voices, so it was very difficult for females to get their voices out. It was definitely a needed group at the time, and while it still is, but more so even then, just to stamp our foot down and say we're here and we're going to be heard.
Can you give me an example of the kind of difficulty you had being taken seriously as a new organization?
The formation of Secular Woman was a response to the ongoing quote-unquote debate about whether feminism has a place in the secular movement and community. And shortly after we became an organization, the heads of a lot of the secular groups decided to release a statement, a group statement, about the harassment that women were facing as they were trying to make their place in the movement. And Secular Woman was supposed to be a part of drafting that and was left out. So when it came time to send it out, and they sent it around and said, well, you can suggest small edits, but no big changes. So we didn't even sign it because, you know, it was a total different conversation than what we were having. They're having the conversation of, well, people should engage in civil debate and be open to discussion. And we're going, we're not open to discussion from people who are yelling threats at us. So just trying to get people on the same page as us and realizing that it was just a different conversation was a big, big obstacle.
It sounds like you had difficulty getting your constituency recognized.
Yes, yes, that's a good way of phrasing that. Very much so.
So aside from that, once you got to determine your own path forward, what was your first big project as an organization?
I guess you could consider Abort Theocracy as our first big project. It's focused on the intersection of religious power over women's bodily autonomy, dedicated to terminating that connection by opposing religious influence in government. And I mean, really, everything it's about is just in the name, Abort Theocracy. It's just all summed up right there.
Nothing provocative in that.
No, no. In fact, actually, wearing the t-shirt, which is a very striking t-shirt too, it's a black shirt with very, very bright colors on it, has created some of the most interesting elevator conversations. Just that, you know, that 2-minute ride where you're stuck with somebody side-eyeing you, like, what's your shirt say?
If I were one of those people and I was asking you what that was all about, what would you say in that 2-minute elevator ride?
Fighting a lot of the religious control imposed on a woman's bodily autonomy.
And do people get that?
Yeah, usually you get the ones who are pro-life who are just like, oh, and just walk away. They don't even want to talk to you. But then you get a lot of people who are like, oh, that's a very interesting way of looking at it. And yeah, you're right. So yeah. I mean, they definitely get it. I don't think there are a lot of people out there who really are clueless that this whole battle is being waged stemming out of religious control. I don't think there are that many who really don't get that picture. If so, I'm not riding in elevators with them.
Probably just as well. What kind of response has Abort Theocracy received within the movement?
You know, there were some naysayers at first, of course, as there always are, especially on projects by women for women. But of course, these are the same people who then ended up giving lots of airtime to the quote-unquote secular pro-lifers anyway. So it's not a response that we really took to heart very much. Otherwise, it was mostly positive. I think a lot of the women in the movement really could relate to it.
You've done other projects as well that work on directing attention to ways in which religion negatively affects women's lives. Can you tell me about some of those projects?
Shameless is one of those projects, actually. And that was supposed to be just a week-long project of women telling their abortion stories, and it went on and on and on. We've held some Twitter chats and hashtags, as well as educational discussions, a lot of it on Twitter and on Facebook, about stories of women coming out and how the religion has affected them as women and how it was aimed at women. One of our board members was brought up in a very kind of fundamentalist religion that she got away from and was very happy to be away from.
And that is Elsa Roberts?
Yes.
And she just spoke about that at AHAcon a couple of weeks ago.
She did. I missed that, but I heard it was very well done.
It was. So now that you've turned your attention to these and you've spent a few years doing that, do you feel like these issues are getting more attention within the broader atheist movement?
You know, I do. And I think the Reason Rally is a prime example of that. The fact that this time around there was much more social justice-y focus as opposed to just the strict atheism, rah, rah, rah. And of course, as the American Humanist Association is leading the way with, you know, not that I'm over here going, ooh, yeah, I'm being interviewed by AHA podcasts and wow, look at the great work they're doing. But seriously.
We yes. always appreciate a plug.
All the work that they are doing under Sincere Carrabo, leading the focus there towards inclusion and making the world a better place. There are still pockets, I believe, of the movement who will only focus on how religion treats women and never apply that to their own lives. So we still have a lot of work to do, but baby steps.
It sounds like Secular Woman is not particularly shy about controversy.
Yeah, no.
I was going to ask if that was a fair assessment. Okay.
No, not at all. No, we don't mind stepping our foot in it. We've done it a couple of times. It's just, you know, stepping your foot in it takes a lot of energy. And that's something that we have to store up sometimes.
How did you end up involved with such a brash organization as Secular Woman?
It's a part of sort of being in the right places at the right times. You know, I went to the Women in Secularism conference because that was like the only thing that was going on like that. And then suddenly there was this organization that was focusing on women in this. I've always been a feminist and I've always been an atheist. And I've never felt at home in now in the other feminist organizations because there was always this high level of woo that I just couldn't handle. So when I found out that Secular Woman was a thing, I was just like, oh, you know, I couldn't join fast enough. I kept waiting for membership site to go live so I could sign up. And after that, it's a matter of when you're vocal enough and you volunteer enough, they end up going, hey, wow, well, you could even do more for us. Why don't you join the board? And now I'm running it. So, you know.
That is always a danger of volunteering.
It is. It is. And a lot of the times I don't mind it because I do have some semblance of, you know, control issues. I'll admit to that, but it takes a lot of work, but it's very good work. So
you've got a project that's going on right now that I think hasn't gotten a ton of attention. Talk to me about Her Story.
Her Story is one of my favorite projects that we do. It's rebuilding the history of women who have been involved in the movement in some way in their lives, because there's so much time where our participation, our works, our accomplishments have been erased or overlooked or overwritten by men. So it's telling the stories of these women. And it's currently we are working with the FFRF to get access to a lot of the history that they have so that we can tell these stories. And that's just the history part of it. We also have sort of a wiki project that I'm working on now that will be to write the history now as we are doing it so we don't have to go back and rebuild like so many people have had to go back and rebuild when it comes to women and what they do. So it's not a public site yet, but I'm hoping that this stops people from having to look back and remember, and therefore they can concentrate on the future.
Excellent. So say that I were somebody learning about Secular Woman for the first time, and something like Her Story sounded great, or getting out there and talking about reproductive rights and the various other ways in which both religious and other patriarchy limit women's lives. And I want to help. Are there volunteer opportunities at the moment?
There are. going to our website, secularwoman.org, there are links to join the organization because, of course, as any organization run by volunteers, we need money. And there's also volunteer. And we can work with you on helping us promote the works of other women. That's one of the big things that we try to do. I mean, our mission is to amplify the voice of secular women. So we try to, whenever we come across projects they're doing, promote them as much as we can. We always need writers, because who doesn't? Writing takes time and volunteers get busy and cry. So we need new ones and fresh ones who can come in and pat them on the back and say, it's okay, I got it for now.
And are there any other projects that Secular Woman has done or is in the process of doing that we should know about?
We also currently have the Secular Women Network that we are trying to build up. And that is an email group for women working in the movement. Right now it's by invitation only as we try to build the groundwork and the structure. But we're happy to have requests to join. And it's just so we can talk about our projects, we can help promote, cross-share, ask questions, whatever.
Now, if you had unlimited funds or volunteers, because you can do a lot with people if you don't have the money, what would Secular Woman be doing?
Taking over the world, of course.
Oh, right.
Oh, we would be working on creating local branches and supporting women at the local level, because so many of them meet blocks just joining the local groups. That's one of the biggest hurdles. And being able to have the resources to start women groups where they can get together and then help each other break those barriers would be huge, huge, huge. We would be working with communities with outreach. We would have our salon running full time. Yeah, we'd be saving the world.
That sounds like a great goal. Did Secular Woman already have local groups?
Not as such. We had a couple of women's only groups that we promoted on our site, but it's not something that we really have the resources at this point to be able to promote and to help. So, I mean, we're always happy to give advice and answer questions and point people in the right direction. But unfortunately, right now, that's about all we can do.
So are there ways that you think the movement has changed in the time that Secular Woman has come into being? We've already talked about a couple of them, but are there other ways that you think the landscape for women in the movement has changed?
Yeah, I think in an overall kind of thing, at least the harassment has been acknowledged, which I think was a huge, huge step to get people to accept. And I think we're recognizing more the women who are doing the work. So, yeah, I think it's definitely changed in ways. You know, we're up to Women in Secularism #4, which I just think is phenomenal. I think a lot of conferences have made a big effort in trying to get parity and trying to get more diversity in their lineup, which you can't go wrong with that. It's, I think we're making strides.
A number of people look at feminist initiatives and they have a history of skepticism about them because they feel that at least particular brands of feminism are for white women or straight women or cisgendered women. Secular Woman identifies itself as an intersectional feminist group, is that correct?
Yes, we do. We try.
And do you find that that's reflected in your membership?
I think so, to some degree. We could always do better. I think that, you know, as anyone, we can always try and we can always learn, and we've had our stumbles. And I think, though, that just the idea that we're willing to learn, we're willing to try harder, we're willing to be more open and inclusive to everybody makes a bit of a difference.
Do you think Secular Woman will ever outlive its mission?
Oh, I hope so. Nothing could make me happier, really. Nothing. I mean, that is kind of my ultimate goal in the different groups that I'm involved in, is to make my job unnecessary.
And what do you think that would look like? What would tell you that it was time that you could hang it up?
Oh, goodness. You know, lions and lambs laying down next to each other. What would that look like?
you know, the absence of religious privilege in the country and the absence of male and white able-bodied het privilege in the country and the world, you know, whatever. But yeah, I mean, those are big goals.
Yeah, they're pretty ambitious.
Yeah, but you know, we work as hard as we can to get there.
All right. Maybe one of these days we'll check in with Secular Woman and see how you guys are doing on that.
We'll be around.
Excellent. And remind us where people can find you again.
Secularwoman.org. We do have a Facebook group. It's membership only, but it is a pretty tight community where we do share our stories. And once you join, you are welcome in the Facebook group. So just something to keep an eye out for.
Great. Thank you very much for joining us, Manette.
Thank you for having me.
As always, we value your feedback on the show. Have a comment or question for today's guests? Have a suggestion for a guest you'd like us to interview? Email us at humanisthour@americanhumanist.org or call our listener feedback line at 202-618-1371. Thank you again for listening to The Humanist Hour, the official broadcast of the American Humanist Association.